Hi, welcome to the Relationship Academy. This is your host, Neha Soni. If you are not in our Facebook group already, free Facebook group, you can go and join it. It's called Manifest Your Soulmate. The link will be in the description. Today's episode is a very special one, and I'm going to be talking to someone who I don't even want to call them as a guest, because he is someone I have grown to know as a friend, and now that's the person in my life. That's my soulmate whom I have manifested, and he is none other than Todd Raphael himself. When we met, these are the things we used to talk about having and doing together. And I'm so happy, Todd, that I'm going to be doing this with you for the first time. So when we met, welcome, first of all, Todd.
Hello. My name is Mate, Soulmate. Nice to meet you.
So when we started talking about stuff, just as friends, you wanted to create a dating app. You were very passionate about creating a dating app, and it had some special features. So I know dating apps are, there's tons of them, and they're quite addictive in nature. So what is your feeling about dating apps?
Well, pretty much dating apps have been all the same. It's all the same people. It doesn't matter what they say, what they feature. It's all the same, because it's not really getting to what the deep root of the problem is. And so once you have a dating app, which allows you so many options, you're gonna have less patience, and you're gonna have a short attention span with trying to connect with anyone. So there's a factor, of course, trying to connect with someone with similar personality, similar hobbies, but most dating apps aren't created in a way which controls the addiction of, you just can't stop, you can't stop. And so I always like to say that a typical dating app is like an all-you-can-eat buffet restaurant. Now, if you go to an all-you-can-eat buffet restaurant, you will not order one meal. So you go, the restaurant offers a whole bunch of lobsters and shrimp and steak. You don't take one lobster on your plate and then you're done. So the dating app is like an all-you-can-eat buffet, in which you just keep on going. You can't stop yourself. The app has been created in a way which does not prevent the addiction of trying to keep on meeting new people. So let's say you do connect with someone. It doesn't matter. You're gonna still look at other people who's on the app. So let's say you're dating someone on Monday, you're still chatting with someone who you plan to go out with the next day. So the people are like a lobster. You cannot just have one lobster, and that's why we've been trying to think of a dating app which can control this type of addiction, to just maybe focus on one person, maybe force oneself to focus on one person. And that's not an easy thing to do, because people have no control to just focus on one person at a time when you're trying to connect to them on a dating app, when you're chatting up other people while trying to connect with one.
That's what I used to tell you. And I said, for as long as we're on these apps, it's just not going to be possible, because that's the nature of our phones. The phone today, as blessed as we are to have the technology to be able to connect, to be connected to whoever we want, like a far away friend from school, like long time ago, we have that ability to connect with others through these platforms. But for as long as it's going to be on an app on your phone, it is not going to solve the major problem that is now invaded us. It's like lack of connection that people don't have connection. No matter how much technology is available, people do not have the connection. So and that's also the case with addiction to technology, right? I used to be on all of these apps, and I was at this point where I'm like, I'm done with these apps. I don't want to be on this app. I'm not getting any results. And all of these apps are the exact same people I'm bumping into. So, and then this makes me feel like something is wrong with me, because I am facing rejection upon rejection upon rejection, or my dates are going nowhere and I'm bumping up against the same type of people. Like the person may be different, but my pattern of problem just continues on, which is why I stopped myself from being on these dating apps. And then guess what? I got onto YouTube and I wanted to learn from a bunch of experts. And then so one of the guys that I started following back then was this really, really cute looking dating coach for women called Matthew Hussey. Some of you may know him. And so he is talking about how to text your guys back. And then he is someone that specializes in texting and what you can text back to someone so that they get interested in you. And I was like, how is that even possible? Because texting, in my opinion, texting is not communication. Texting is just some string of words on your phone sent to you by an absolute stranger who doesn't care about you, who knows nothing about you, and you have probably not even met them. But then or you're in a relationship with them, but there is no communication, and texting is confused for communication. And that messes up people's brains, because they're relying on the text message as a sense of validation to what they have just messaged someone.
I want to add to the reality of texting that some people may not talk about. Yeah, there is a romantic element of writing someone, you know, it's poetic. You know, your text writing back and forth as if it's some old-fashioned love letters of the past. But there, and it's fine as a tool, but if you think you're connecting to someone by just text, let's say you met someone online and you've been texting that person for, it doesn't even matter how long, it doesn't matter for a week, it doesn't matter for a month, it doesn't matter if you've only texted that person for 10 years, it's all make-believe until you meet the person and you actually see how they are in real life. Because the whole format of this is based on that usually you will not have a sense of control. So the person that you think you're in love with on the other end, that person is likely texting other people before you and after you, and so are you. So it's very rare if both people are actually totally loyal, committed texters. For that to exist is very rare. So you think you're Prince Charming that you've been writing to for 10 years is just dedicated to texting to you. But the reality is when people go use their phones late at night, when they feel lonely or horny, they're going to be texting people. When they go in that app or whatever, they're not going to delete the app. They might text you a bit. Then they probably texted someone before you and after you. And so have you. Likely. So to think that only this person's been committed to me through text is, you're lying, you're in denial of yourself. So this is how the system is. It's not really your fault, because the apps in which you use to text, either through WhatsApp or the dating app, you're usually most of the time texting a bunch of people. So besides that element of the lack of digital commitment, in which you're probably texting others who are back up to the main one you think you're in love with, and vice versa, none of it really is going to matter. None of it is real until you actually meet in real life, until you see how you actually are, so you can judge better how the person is, rather than judging a person by emojis and how they use their grammar and what they say by text. You have to meet the person. And the sooner you meet in person, the sooner you'll either know you're wasting your time or connecting to that person.
I like that you brought up this point of texting in the late at night when you're horny or lonely.
Yeah.
And that's in there, like a lot of people who are doing this, especially, and girls are often falling prey to that. It's called breadcrumbing. Leaving breadcrumbs, and then, because when you receive a text message from someone, like even if it's on an app or like, you know, your actual phone, doesn't matter, WhatsApp or a dating app, you're getting a notification on your phone, and that's keeping you in the loop, right? So you're getting some sort of validation. And then because you're getting validation a tiny bit from that person, from that, you think that it is something, it means something, and then you analyze the fuck out of it, which obviously means nothing. But then that person who is breadcrumbing you, do you even realize that you are being breadcrumbed by that person, by just, okay, a little, he gives you a little bit and then he goes away. Or she gives you a little bit just to keep you on the edge and just on the, like, around you, but they have got nothing to do with you and they don't care a bit about you.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And as far as we're going to depend on this habit of texting each other, and it's okay to use that when you are within a relationship, but then for urgencies, I tell Todd, just call me, because I'm not often necessarily checking all my messages, because they can be they're a distraction for me, honestly, distracting me away from my work. And if I'm just getting random texts, I don't want that distraction. So I tell him, you can please call me instead of texting. It doesn't mean anything. If you are in a relationship, let me tell you this. A relationship does not exist if there is no communication. And please do not confuse yourself that texting is communication, because it is not. If you're not in a relationship with them, like a serious relationship with them, it does not mean anything. The other thing I want to bring to your attention, you have something to say.
Yeah, the thing about communicating with your supposed loved one or loved one by text, there is the other common thing that can happen is the miscommunication. When you're just texting, you're missing out on emotions. And when people write each other, if you misuse one exclamation point or period or punctuation, any kind of punctuation, or use the wrong kind of emoji, it can be interpreted as something else to that other person. So when you're just when you're texting important topics, this is something that can cause some serious issues, which is why if you have anything important to talk about in life, whether it's about the relationship you're having or anything serious, it's preferable, best is talk in person. If that's not a possibility, then at least speak on the phone. But the texting allows a lot of miscommunication to happen. And then once that happens, then that can start a new level of misunderstanding, all because someone wrote it in a certain way that you assumed that that other person understood. So if you write something in a way with the wrong punctuation or the wrong emoji or not enough emojis, that could somehow upset the other person. So when you're together for the next day or weeks or whatever, this one misunderstood sentence can lead to maybe the relationship getting negative based on the assumption that what was said was negative. But this is all based on misunderstanding of a written text. So it's dangerous. So if you have anything important to talk about, it's better to do in person where you see each other's emotions and not assume something and then assume that person said something negative, and then you base your behavior for, I don't know, a day or days or weeks based on that misunderstood sentence. Because during that time when you're acting cold, rightly so, if you thought that person was being negative or something, you don't want to cause a problem in your relationship for the next weeks based on a misunderstanding when it could have just been cleared up when you spoke to that person in person.
That's right. And when you're texting, you can't hear anything. When you speak to someone, you can sense their emotion in their voice. So your best communication technique is using your voice. This is why going old school in terms of dating is the best thing that can happen, so that you can avoid all these problems that are being caused by these dating apps itself. Now, coming back to texting and assumptions, Todd and I had a misunderstanding as well. So he's someone that texts a lot. So you like to text because you express yourself more. You express yourself better in texting, in writing. And I'm someone who gets tired of typing. So I want to talk. When I get tired of typing, I don't want to do that anymore because it's exhausting. So then I start leaving voice messages, which works better for me, and I can read the messages and I can reply and can respond in voice message. That's fine. But there was a time where we had a misunderstanding, and Todd would just, because that's one of his ways to express himself, he continued to text on the phone, to send me long WhatsApp text messages, like a barrage of message after message after message after message. And there is a misunderstanding. I am absolutely not ready for that information. Now, when you are upset about something within your relationship, you are best to not text at all. And for you, if you are angry or upset about something, and this is something that we experienced more than over a year ago here, and I said, if I am upset about something and I want to, because this relationship is important to me, I would want to step back and not communicate. I'm okay to not communicate and text back and forth, because in this moment I am upset and I do not want to cause any further problems, so I will stop communicating. Doesn't mean I don't want to talk at a later point. The reason why I want to stop that communication is because I want to stop any further misunderstanding.
And this is why when you're in the beginning of a relationship, it's important to have one type of conversation at some point of how each side communicates when they're upset or angry. Because often when you're just started seeing someone, it's all happy and fireworks and stuff. And it's maybe a bunch of weeks and months before there's any issue or before there's any type of issue you want to bring up. It's actually often where it's a buildup of something, because you're still in the courtship phase for weeks and months. So there could be some type of issue, but you let it go, but it could be actually building up in your mind. So by the time you bring it, one of you brings it up, it's just anger. And this is the first time the other is experiencing how they express their anger. But so it's sort of jarring. So this is why many couples may be intimidated from having that conversation of how they communicate when they're upset or how they communicate when they're angry, rather than suddenly getting an anger attack from someone and you have no idea where it came from, how to respond to it, or if the person still loves you or cares for you. And this is why it's important to have these talks when everything is calm, when everything is good. How does one communicate when you feel upset at the other or over something? How does one communicate that?
And this brings me to fakeness. You know, a lot of people, when they're courting each other, they're just revealing their best sides and not bringing themselves, their whole self. They only want a certain element of their personality to be seen, and the other, they do not want it to be seen as yet, which means that later on, let's say they get into a relationship, then that side comes out, and then people believe, oh, he's changed. He's not the same person I was dating. She's not the same girl I was dating. What happened? What's wrong? All that stuff. What do you think about fakeness in courtship?
Yeah, because when people are seeing each other in the beginning, yeah, you want to show your best, and you're afraid to maybe scare the other person away by showing any type of negative emotion. So people may keep that in for a long time, and then until it's too late, where it's just an explosion of anger. And then the other person's thrown off. You're like, oh my God, it was going so well. What happened? That is based around not being your true self when you're courting someone. It's understandable. You want to be on your best behavior, but people are trained to think that if you talk about how you communicate when you're upset, it's going to scare someone away. And when you're single, that's the last thing you want to do, is scare someone away in the beginning of the courtship.
And so things remain at the surface level. Right?
Yeah. And you meet someone who can talk about all these things, and with both sides, if you can both talk about all this stuff, then things can go smoother, and you can learn how to communicate together and compromise and just understand how the other person's brain processes without taking it too personally.
So you're keeping things at the surface level, and then you're doing that with a lot of people. So it's again back to that, you know, buffet table of, you know, I'm talking to so many people and I want to talk to so many people. And then because I'm getting validation or whatever from this one and this one and this one, and I'm getting lobsters and I'm getting to eat frequently as often as I want, it's not going to get me to stop.
Yeah, that's correct. When people are on these dating apps, you're not just speaking to one person. I don't know anyone who could do that. I mean, when you're talking to someone, you have a potential list. You have a list of people who are your priority, first choice, second choice, third choice. So, which ends up, let's say you see Tom on Monday, but you've also planned to see John on Tuesday and Peter on Wednesday.
The guy's also doing this.
Yeah, and the guy's doing the same thing. Everyone has a potential list. They're all chatting up many people, and they're all multitask dating. So as long as you're seeing a bunch of people in the week, which continues that pattern over and over, you'll never connect to one person, because you need to focus on one person to actually genuinely connect to someone. Now, if you always have a backup, and if you always have a backup, how can you connect to one person? How can you give, if you're always thinking, oh, there's someone better than me. I mean, there's always someone better than this person. How can you give someone a chance? How can you give someone that time?
So that's true. And this is like a pattern. The reason why we're always reaching for more and more and more, it's because, in my opinion, there is a certain lack within ourselves that is not fulfilled. And then we try to fill that up and we're not aware about it, right? We try to fill that gap from the outside. You know, I want to eat more. It's like, you know, addiction to food as well. You know, there food addiction is no different than this kind of addiction, addiction to technology, addiction to people. It's like you're distracting yourself from feeling certain emotions. And then you get into this addictive behavior of, you know, seeing this one and this one and this one because you do not want to be with yourself and you're not comfortable by yourself and you're looking for that validation from the outside. And so you do not know how your addictive behavior, which you're of course not aware of, is ruining your relationship with yourself first and then with others.
You have to practice what you preach. So just like, or I've heard stories of people seeing a psychologist and then the psychologist himself or herself also is talking about seeing their own psychologist. And you're like deep down, you're like, yeah, people have problems. That's okay. But deep down, you sort of lose some respect because you want your psychologist to be mentally sound and not have problems. You know, you're taking advice from this person. You don't want to have the problems that they're supposedly specializing in. You've told me once about Osho. What's his name? The Indian sex lovemaking guru?
Osho.
Yeah, so Neha used to tell me about Osho, how he, the master of whatever, lovemaking, whatever. I asked, was he married or have a relationship? And then it turns out, I don't know, he's had tons of girlfriends his whole life, or he never married, or we're constantly seeing someone. So yeah, you're gonna be a love master if all you're doing, if you're really good at making love, and if you meet someone during courtship, those first weeks you're gonna show your tricks, your lovemaking tricks, and you do that and you break up with that person and you keep on repeating and repeating and repeating. Okay, so now that's Osho. He's the master of showing his lovemaking tricks to girlfriends over and over again. But let's see. Let's see if he can do that in a long-lasting relationship. So that's why I don't buy Osho, because it seems like he never had a long-lasting relationship, and that's the true test of being a master lovemaker, to see if you can do it consistently, not just during the courtship period, when of course you're extra excited over the person, you're extra horny because you were single before, so everything is more amplified. So that's why I don't buy a guru like Osho, who's been known to be this love master. Who knows, it's probably the same for what, a Don Juan or Casanova. These guys were known to be master lovemakers, but did they have... I'm not sure. I know about Osho. I read about Osho. He didn't have a long-lasting relationship. I'm not sure about Don Juan Casanova, but they're known as master lovemakers, but can they do that with one person for a lengthy period of time?
And so you're bringing up the topic of toxicity. I talked to some coaches, and then I this was on a Facebook group. I shared the same analogy I just shared, that I would not hire someone, a dating coach or a relationship, if they are themselves not in a relationship. And then this lady replies to me saying, "Huh, I am a coach, a dating coach for single women." Mm-hmm. I'm like, How does that even work?
Is she in a relationship or was she single?
She's single and she is helping other women to be single. Remember when we traveled to New Jersey and I saw a woman who was reading this book, How to Date Men When You Hate Men? So it's like this extreme anger and bitterness, sadness, whatever, that a lot of women are going with when they are in the dating industry because they have faced betrayal upon betrayal upon betrayal, and that they don't know what to do with that energy, so it becomes rather toxic. And then they go, oh, I'm happy single. Remember we watched that TED talk where this woman goes, oh, you people in relationships, you guys don't know how pleasant being single and on your own is. You can do whatever you want, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, fine. Maybe you're happy.
Yeah, people often want to rationalize what may seem as a weakness. They'll rationalize it deep down and they're going to flip it into something positive. But, you know, I have trouble buying all that.
So, yeah, like you said, weaknesses, right? Rationalizing your weaknesses and, like, you know, and anger, like I shared in one of my previous podcasts, you can go and listen to that, that anger is made out to be a weakness when actually anger is just an emotion. It is telling you something. You know, your emotions tell you something. It's not a weakness. It is what it is. And because you refuse to see it for what it is, you project that then onto other people. And this is exactly what happened when there were a bunch of single women in a group, in a business, women's business group. And I shared one of my offers on that group. And there were people who had shown interest, which means those women had already asked for my ebook guide, which I have on my website. They asked for that ebook. It's called How to Find Your Perfect Partner and Keep Them for Life. That was the one back then. And so two women actually asked me for that. And when I put out my offer in that same group, these women, it triggered something in them. And they came out telling me on the group publicly, oh, not everyone wants to be in a relationship, ha ha ha. And then the other girl also supports that same lady. And both of these women are on my mailing list, reading my emails. And this is the type of toxic behavior going around where singlehood is being celebrated because those single women do not have the capacity to face their emotions. It's like, you know, when you'd much rather change your partner over and over than be with one person and change yourself. So a lot of people don't want to change themselves. And then they much rather project whatever it is that they can't handle, they project onto others. And this is exactly what happened with me when that's something that triggered in them, that got triggered by what I had said. So I'm not the one causing the anger in them, causing the upset in them, but that's what they do not know what to do. And then singlehood is celebrated in this way, and then it becomes toxic. So Todd, what's the definition? What is your explanation of single and happy?
Well, I'd like to break it down into two simple categories. If you say you're single and happy, it pretty much means one, you're asexual. You're not interested in intimacy anymore. You're happy being by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
that's fine. Yeah, it's fine if you're antisocial or hermit-like, or maybe that's an introverted thing. But single and happy means you're not, you're done. You're done with intimacy. You're done with physical intimacy, and you're done with emotional intimacy. You're done with that. That's one choice. Hmm. And the other, to say when you're single and happy, means you don't want to deal with being in a relationship, but you like one night stands. And so you're happy doing your own thing. You don't want anyone else messing with your life. You want your time all for yourself until you get lonely and horny at night, and then you have shallow one night stand sex with someone. And that's for both men and women. So as long as you acknowledge that that's what that really is, to be single and happy, it's either those two categories. You're either asexual or you like one night stand sex and prefer not to take it further with that person because you have this identity that you're happy being single.
So it's like they don't want their identity being challenged. Do you think that would be the right thing to say?
It's partly, but a lot of people are ashamed of saying, they're embarrassed or ashamed to say they don't want to be in a relationship, but they do want one night stand sex. I don't know if that's a male or female thing. I'm assuming nowadays both genders are fine with doing that. But at least be clear on calling what it is. Don't be embarrassed of saying that. Don't be ashamed of saying, you know, I'm not interested in relationships. I like occasional sex, but that's it. I don't want to get close to anyone. So it's either that, or it's, no, I'm not interested in having a relationship with anyone. I'm not interested in having intimacy sex with anyone. So that's the asexual one, or the one night stand one. That's all I can see.
So being true to themselves and saying what they actually want, and not just what the other or anybody else wants to hear, just because that's what you do in relationships and stuff like that, and in dating, and this is the things you talk about.
Right, and yeah, people may tend to go with the conventional explanation. Yeah, I'm single and happy, but don't forget what that actually means. So it'd be better if people clearly say what they like. So when a person clearly says what they want and like, then they get more aware. They get more aware of what they like, and they're not lying to themselves.
So as long as you're not lying to yourself, it's okay. Many times I've come across these people when they have been challenged in terms of, you know, they'll say, yeah, I would love to have a relationship and blah, blah, blah. When they look a little bit deeper into that, they realize that they're not even ready for a relationship. They were just in love with an idea of a relationship. They're in love for the longest time. They're in love with an idea that is in their mind. It's just playing out in their mind, and this person comes in, dances a little bit, and then they are having text messages and blah blah blah. So it's just an idea in their mind, which is kind of controlling them, and they're not aware about that.
Right. So it's a shame when their thoughts or their words are not in sync with their actions. And to feel better, to really feel happy, is to have everything in sync, to have your thoughts and your words and your actions all in sync. So there's nothing wrong with being an asexual hermit who's afraid of sexual intimacy. There's nothing wrong with it. And there's nothing wrong with having one night stands, as long as you can express that and not be ashamed of expressing that. So there are these gimmicky catchphrases that people just say in time. They just repeat it over and over again. So the common one now is, yeah, I'm happy and I'm single. And it's supposed to be some sort of empowering thing. It doesn't matter for either gender. But it's possible people just say that these things, these catchy phrases, and they don't really understand what they're saying, or their actions aren't in sync with what they really feel.
I think that's true. I think it's they haven't had the chance to feel themselves at a deeper level, which is why they are at a place of denial. You know, and they continue to be in that denial. I want to bring to your attention this is why I wanted to move away from, like, you know, one single person's perspective and, you know, having this listening to some guy who I don't even know, but he's some dating guru online, and I don't even know if he's in a relationship, but I'm listening to him because he may be sort of helping me, because I don't know otherwise, I don't know better. But then, because I was observing myself in the dates that I was going into, and every single time what happened was I go out three dates and then the guy disappears, three dates and then the guy disappears, two dates and then the guy disappears. I'm like, what is going on? What is it that I am not doing right? What is it that I'm doing wrong? So I stopped and looked at myself, and it's not like I'm taking rejection personally. It's like, okay, I have to take back two steps back for me to realize I can't be taking this thing personally. It's happened over and over, and this is a pattern that I have created, and why is it that this is happening? So in order for me to look deeper, I have to look at not just my own perspective and be have that validated. So I thought, I think I understand the kind of relationship I want to manifest. And then I sought out a couple who are relationship coaches, and they do this together. So then they are the one I learned from, because I was able to learn from their both genders, their perspective on the problem of dating and how I can overcome the obstacles in my way, like the bumping up against the same stuff over and over in dating. And why is that happening to me? And what is it that I can do differently? What is it I can do to improve my results? So together, both of them can help me, and they helped me navigate my way to the type of relationship I wanted to manifest, because they themselves are examples of that relationship. I'd like to thank you, Todd, for joining me. I loved this talk. I hope we do this more often.
Thank you. Looking forward.
And we'll talk to you real soon. Send us your questions to contact@nehasoni.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Have a wonderful day.